We're going to start at 12:30 sharp. If the authors of the bill would come to the stand, I would appreciate it. And I now see a quorum for Transportation Finance. Transportation Finance is called to order. Representative Hornstein. Or Representative Wincheski. We're starting. We could use your presence at the table. How this will occur today is it's a joint meeting of Transportation Finance and Policy. Transportation Finance has just been called to order because we do have a quorum. When policy gets the quorum, we'll officially call that committee together as well. We will hear this first bill together. It's actually in Transportation Finance, so the Transportation Finance members will be the ones voting on this bill. And then Transportation Finance will adjourn and Transportation Policy will continue with the rest of the agenda on their committee. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Wincheski. If you would please start telling us what's the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm sorry I was caught off guard. It's actually Representative Hornstein who is doing initial testimony, and I think he just stepped out of the room. And so, Madam Chair, can I ask you, my understanding is we are working off Representative Hornstein's bill.
And that was my understanding as well, but I hear you have similar bills, and I like to start on time, and you're here, and here comes Representative Hornstein, so he may be able to bail you out, but...
Thank you.
Representative Hornstein, would you like to move your bill to be considered by the committee?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 313 to be recommended to pass and sent to local government. Is that correct?
That's my understanding.
Okay.
And if you'll explain your bill.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I need to just get settled here. Okay. Madam Chair and members, very much appreciate the joint Transportation Finance and Transportation Policy Committee's hearing, House File 313. Just wanted to quickly go over very briefly the bill because we have a number of people from municipalities that are testifying. Madam Chair and members, this is simply enabling legislation. It enables municipalities to form a street utility. And Subdivision 1 is just simply a definition of terms. Subdivision 2 is just, again, the authorization piece, authorizing the municipalities to impose the utility fees on real property in the city. Subdivision 3 is very important, members, to me, and I know that there's a lot of concern about this bill. You've probably heard, as I have, from opponents who have some legitimate concerns, partly about process. And Subdivision 3 requires a supermajority of the city council to enact a street utility fee, and there are some provisions in this section, Madam Chair and members, that require notice, and that's critical because the opponents have concerns about how their particular operations, their businesses, are viewed by city councils. I think those are legitimate, and I think the supermajority, the two-thirds, anticipates that and really requires the cities to dig pretty deep in terms of getting political support for such a move. Subdivision 4 also it just lays out the manner in which the cities can collect the fees. It sets out timetables. I also think Subdivision 5 is very, very important because it requires the city, the onus on this bill is very important. The onus is on the municipality to ensure that any of these fees and charges are part of a master plan and have gone through a public hearing process. That's very important as well. Now, Madam Chair, we Subdivision 7 is part of that as well because there is a process laid out, a requirement, in fact, that in order for the fee to be specified and agreed upon. There does need to be a study. There does need to be trip generation data. That was another concern that opponents raised with us, and I think Subdivision 7 really gets at that, so that we have a clearly understood process for how these fees will be decided upon, how they will be determined, and Subdivision 7 does that. Now, Madam Chair, I did want to let you know that there is in your packets a brief amendment for Subdivision 8, and I don't know if we'd like to move that now or at a later time.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein, would this amendment get the bill in the shape in which you'd like to discuss it?
Yes.
Would you briefly explain the amendment to the committee, please?
The amendment on Subdivision 8 was a result of a meeting we had with Judge Perez yesterday, who was raised issues about the appeal process and which court, which jurisdictional court the appeal should go, and it was his suggestion. He laid out the case, which Representative Lanchesky and I agreed with after we heard him out, that the district court would be a more appropriate place than tax court to hear these appeals. So that is the amendment.
Members, are there any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, if the members of the Transportation Finance Committee would like to vote in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, let me just conclude by just highlighting, you know, again, three issues that are very important procedurally, and I hope and trust provide some comfort language to some of the concerns that you'll hear later from those who are opposed. Number one, the supermajority requirement, two-thirds. We take this very, very seriously. This is a very serious issue before cities and their taxpayers and the businesses that do business in these communities. I think the trip generation data and study and public hearing is another venue for those with concerns to participate in the process, to work in partnership with these communities so that these fees are arrived upon in a fair way and agreed upon by all parties. And if that doesn't work, Madam Chair, there is finally the Subdivision 8 appeals process. So there are, in this very short bill, three areas in which those with concerns can have those concerns be heard out. So in conclusion, Madam Chair, and I'll turn it over to Representative Lanchesky to fill in any holes in my testimony, but this is a bill that I think provides municipalities with one more tool in which to raise much-needed revenue for much-needed street repairs, from potholes to other improvements. This gives cities another option. I think it also provides some property tax relief and spreads the responsibility for street repairs a little more fairly and equitably through the system and through the users of this important public infrastructure. So
thank
with
you.
That, Madam Chair, I would just ask Representative Lanchesky if she wants to add any further comments.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We want to allow a second here to allow Chair Earhart to call the policy committee to order. They now have a quorum.
Actually, I was going to do that after you get through it, but we'll do it now.
Right.
Call the policy, Transportation Policy Committee to order, and the clerk will take the roll. I think we do have a quorum, in case we get to any business in a little bit.
Right. Thank you. Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you, Chair Holberg and Chair Earhart. And again, I want to apologize for our disorganization for the first couple minutes, so I apologize for that to all the members. And I appreciate your patience with us. Just a little bit about where I came from on this bill. I put this bill independently from Representative Hornstein. I actually decided to author this legislation after I read about it, I think in a League of Minnesota Cities or an AMM handout of some kind. And the reason that is, as a little history, is my community, Bloomington, was the guy who's the chief engineer there now, his name is Charlie Honschel. He was working with Richfield at the time, actually, and he dreamt up what we have now called the Stormwater Utility Tax or Utility Fee in the state of Minnesota. This models that. It's the same process in law. It's legislation that was passed in 1983, and it says if cities want to fund stormwater utility improvements, they can use this exact same method, except for the proxy and how you determine use. That's what's different here, and it needs to be because one's water and one's roads. What happened in 1983 was that legislation was passed for all cities, and there are currently less than 10% of all cities in the state of Minnesota using it. This is not a new concept. It's new probably to the Transportation Committee, but what we already have it in place. What I would tell you about it is this is what it's trying to do, to get to the crux of the issue. When a city develops, let's take Representative Holberg, and she's in Lakeville. As Representative Holberg moves to Lakeville and wants to buy the new home on the new street that's being built in her town to give her access to her new home, she pays these huge access charges that are not, they go through the developer and are put in the price of her new home. And that's how all the cities build their streets. I mean, we all pay for it in the price of our house, and we should, because but for Representative Holberg moving on to that street, they don't need the street. The city's functioning without the street. So as you construct a city, you use a special assessment method to get access to people. Now, when your city's all completely built, and that's really what this bill is designed for, your city's all built, you're not building any new streets, you're not assessing people to put a new street in, how are you going to do the maintenance of these streets? And this is a huge problem. As you know, most cities, and you are all on this committee, so you understand that the gas tax does not fund this. It doesn't fund it at all for small cities, I believe, and it funds it, I think, for 15 or 20% for larger cities. And I know the chairs would know this better than I, but nonetheless, the gas tax is not going to work for these local road improvements. So the philosophy behind it says, you know, should we do what we do now, which is when Representative Earhart's street deteriorates, he's been there forever, the city says, we need a new street in Edina, and you live on it. It comes through and it assesses everybody on that street. And it says, you can all pay $20,000. Instead of saying, all of you in the city, who all reside in the city, who use all the roads, should pay collectively for maintenance and depreciation. It's not about new roads. It's only for maintaining the current system. This is the only time you could use it. So what we're currently doing is a special assessment process. And the way that works is the special assessor comes out to Representative Earhart's house, and he says he has to meet the letter of the law, which says that to assess Representative Earhart, the assessor has to prove he will benefit from this improvement. So it actually, what the assessor does in turn, is it ends up taxing Representative Earhart at a higher rate than the assessor needs to, because to make the improvement argument, the assessor has to come up with fancy stuff to say, you know, you're getting value out of this, Representative Earhart. So it comes up with new aprons or driveways, curb and gutter that may not be needed. The current system actually tries to get cities, kind of force the city to spend more than they need to for basic maintenance, because they have to meet the special assessment law, which says the property has to be improved. So what we're currently doing is we're supporting a process that was designed for new constructs, is not working for maintaining these roads. Now, I did want to address one other thing, if I may, and that is that I've understood from some of my friends behind me that the business community is not too thrilled about this bill. And so what I want to tell you about this is, because I didn't know that until today, I haven't had a lot of time to talk with all of them, but I have met with John Williams to add an amendment to this bill to cap the cost to them, to address their concern. And what I would argue to the business community is the gas tax won't work, as we've covered. And I know you guys sit and think long and hard about how we're going to pay for all this stuff. So currently, what do? They use the property tax. That's what they're doing. They're using the property tax. And business is paying that, too. Now, what I would say to the business community is, why would you want to have the property tax system, which is based on market value, determine how much you're using the roads? There's almost no correlation between the two. This actually says if you're an intense use and you're putting lots of cars on the road, you pay a higher trip generation fee, is what we're calling it in the bill. So my amendment says that if the lowest payer is, say, $3 a month, the highest payer can only be 100 times more, maybe $300 a month. So, for an example, in Bloomington, a house might pay $300 a month. The Mall of America might pay $300 a month. They actually use the roads at over 1,000 times the rate a resident does. So they get a huge benefit there. So we're trying to address, I think, some misunderstanding with the business community who thinks this is a new tax. It's not a new tax. They're already paying for it. They're just paying it through the property tax system. So this is an attempt to take this off the property tax system, move it to a user fee, which most people believe that if you can find a benefit a property is receiving or a person and you can give them a fee directly as opposed to a general tax, that's better tax policy. And it's like the gas tax. That's what we're doing. We're only making people put gas in the car. So I'm ready for everybody's objections and questions.
Thank you very much. I do have a question, and maybe with your experience in the tax area, you have the answer. My understanding is that the city of St. Paul does this in some form already with the fee for cutting trees, and it's based on frontage, I believe. Do you know anything about what they're doing and why they can do that and not this? Or is there a difference from cities of first class? Or,
Madam Chair, if I understand your question correctly in what St. Paul is doing, and I hate to speak for them, it is not the same thing. They are using the special assessment process based on valuation at the curb to pay for some things, and they are taking it off the property tax. But we're trying to get away from that special assessment process, and they're actually setting up, and we have these under law, special assessment service districts, where you can go in and tax a bunch of users, a bunch of rates, based on market value and footage for different services, and this would be different from that.
Okay, thank you. I think we've got about 10 minutes for testimony in favor of this. I don't know if members want to wait till after we hear the testimony for questions, or...
I have a question.
Representative Cox, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Did you have a question?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. Representative Lincheski, did you say you were going to propose a cap like you were talking about?
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if Mr. Williams is in the room. He was getting it, and I asked him to 10 minutes before we came down to meet because, honestly, I had not heard the concerns. Even though the bill was introduced a long time ago, no one from the business community had come to talk to me about it, so I was trying to address it at 2:20. So I apologize, and my understanding is he's bringing it.
Representative Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think we really should have some type of cap in here. I mean, if this is going to move forward, you referred to the stormwater bill. I believe that you said it. This was modeled after that, but that's the part they forgot. Because I think the stormwater bill has a cap in it of some kind. And I can't remember. Second question I have is this: was I understanding correct that this is applying only to fully developed cities or portions of cities that the people in the fully developed areas would be exposed to these street fees? New areas would not, and is there a difference between what's new and what's old?
Representative Lincheski.
Madam Chair, I probably shouldn't have stated it that way. Any city could use it if they go through the process that Representative Hornstein has explained. You'd have a city council look at this enabling legislation, again, in stormwater, less than 10% of the cities do it, and say, do we want to do this? If we do, they have to go through a full-blown city council hearing. They'll have people come in and say, you're setting rates too high, too low. They can pick that. But it would be available to anybody. It just can only be used for maintenance and reconstruction projects. So while Representative Holberg, in the case that I was using, is representing a city that's still very much growing and putting in new streets, there may be a part of her city that is ready for a reconstruct. Now the road is now 30 or 50 years old, and they're looking for a different mechanism. So it doesn't limit that the whole city would have to be fully developed, but you couldn't use it for a new road. All new roads would not be able to do this.
And Representative Cox, this bill is going to make a number of stops for local government into taxes, too, so there will be plenty of opportunity for amendments as it moves along. Representative Hornstein.
Just very quickly, Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Cox, just, you know, to emphasize that another criteria is that all of these revenues would have to conform with a master plan. So you would have to have a city that's engaged in that master planning process for this to even kick in at all.
Right. Representative Earhart, and then we only have about 10 minutes for the pro side on this, so we'll have to keep moving.
This is a question for Randy Hill, Indiana City Engineer. I understood in the conversation that we had that some cities, perhaps Golden Valley or St. Louis Park, were already using a frame of this in reference to Representative Holbrook's question. Can you enlighten us with that? Right here.
Sure. Earhart, I think we can, when he comes up to testify, we'll...
He's not going
to
come up and testify. That's not an answer. He's just here for questions.
Oh, well, we will get him up here to testify.
Okay.
Thank you. And I have been informed that Councilmember Elkins from Bloomington has a meeting that he has to leave, so if he'd like to come first and make his comments.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you, committee members. I will try and keep this short because I know there are a lot of other people who want to testify here. I think the situation that we face in Bloomington is probably a good example for exploring some of these issues. The City of Bloomington has a well-defined pavement management program, and in the past we've created reserves to fund it, to just for the maintenance of existing streets. But by the year 2007, we'll have completely drawn down our reserves, and we'll be looking at about a $1.7 million per year shortfall in our pavement management program fund that we use to maintain streets. And this is simply a legacy of the fact that Bloomington went through its explosive growth years during the baby boom years in the 60s and 70s, and as a result, all of those streets that were built during that period have now are ending the end of their useful life. And what we're facing is that we can either do preventative maintenance in the form of what are called mill and overlays, which is where you scrape off the top layer and put down a new layer of blacktop, or we can wait until these streets are completely failed, in which case then we go back and we reconstruct them from scratch at double the price. And our public works engineers have estimated that if we basically let these streets go completely to pot and then come back and reconstruct them, that over the 8 to 15 years over which we need to do this work, the cost will on average be about 30% or 40% higher. So one way or another, we're going to, you know, find the money to finance doing these mill and overlays as preventative maintenance so our streets don't get that. Unlike, you know, many cities that will testify today, we're probably in a better position where we've realistically, given our tax base, have the ability to levy an extra $1.7 million a year to get this done. But the question really then is that the most appropriate way to pay for this, or would it be better to assess a user fee that relates the amount that somebody pays to the amount of that they use the streets? And I think the answer that I would say is that I think it's far preferable to use a user fee where user pays, and I think this is consistent with a theme that I think you're going to hear from a number of other groups, such as the Citizens League, and their excellent report advocating for more transparency in transportation funding. And quite frankly, I'd be a little bit disappointed if the Chamber came out in opposition to this bill, given the strong emphasis that they have put in their Minnesota Moves program in favor of user fees. In Bloomington right now, business pays about 40% of the property tax bill. I don't know that they'd end up paying a higher share of the bill if we put this on a property tax levy than they would on a street utility. But I think I think in our case, we can do it either way. I think that using a user fee that bases the cost based on usage would be a far fairer, more appropriate way to do it if we had this mechanism.
I have a quick question. Did you estimate what the cost to your school district would be under this model? And I don't know how many schools you have. I'm thinking of Lakeville. It has something like 17 buildings and...
Probably similar amount in Bloomington. We don't have a lot of tax-free property. We have school buildings. We have Normandale College. For us, that I don't think is a huge issue. But
it may be for them.
It might be for them. But I mean, we're a large enough city that the cost, I think, is going to be spread equally enough. And I think you have some good examples in the materials that the League has put together to show that these fees would not be, onerous.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for this witness? Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I know we're conscious of time. There's just a couple of people who I've instructed to be very brief who also want to testify. Mike Messo is a city engineer from Duluth, and he's the president of the City Engineers Association.
I was looking at my list and looking at the people from Duluth and Chatfield, making sure that we accommodate them as a result of their long drive to get here. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to step forward and present your testimony.
My name is Judy Johnson. I'm president of the League of Minnesota Cities, and I'm also the mayor of Plymouth, and we will be brief in consideration of your time. If somebody would be available, though, to pass these handouts for you, it does give you a snapshot of what's going on in the city of Plymouth with regards to street reconstruction and the dilemma we're facing. I would also just refer you to the handout that was included in your packet that shows that 145 cities have signed on with resolutions supporting the street utility fee option. And on that list, you'll need to add Eden Prairie and Farmington because they have recently signed on as well. I want to again thank you for taking time to listen to this important funding option for cities. The League of Minnesota Cities commissioned a task force this past year to study local financing options for essential services to be provided by city governments that are reliable and equitable and accountable. And this is one of the recommendations that has come out of that task force. And I'd like to remind everyone on the committee that this is just a bill that authorizes cities to pursue a street utility fee. It's enabling. It's not to say that all cities would necessarily go ahead and mention or move forward with this option. If I could just have you refer to the blue handout that I'm giving you right now so that you can see what's going on in the city of Plymouth. We are a western suburb of the metro area that is fast growing. At the same time, we have redevelopment in our community. Plymouth has over 275 miles of city streets. Every 25 years, each of these streets should be reconstructed or resurfaced. The average cost for reconstruction and resurfacing is $700,000 a mile. We should be reconstructing and resurfacing 11 miles per year at a cost of $7.7 million a year. Without adequate funding source, we cannot keep up right now because we are currently using assessments and pay-as-you-go and bonding. Plymouth has spent about $2.5 million annually in recent years on reconstruction. We've done an average of 45 miles in 15 years or are just doing 3 miles per year on average, which is significantly short on what we need to be doing. I'd also like to just refer you to the two maps attached to the blue handout. The first one you'll see lists the conditions of all of the streets in the city of Plymouth that our engineers and our interns have just done. Plymouth's goal is to maintain a street condition rating of 70. It goes from 0 to 100, 100 being a new street and 0 being a street that has completely failed. The average Plymouth street condition rating is steadily declining. One of our problems is that we have clay soils in Plymouth. That's not helping with infrastructure below the streets, nor is it helping with our street base and our asphalt. Our rating has fallen from 85 in 1995 to 66 in 2004. The average rating will fall to a 51 in 2014 if the city maintains its current funding level of $2.5 million a year. 28% or 77 miles of our streets are already rated 0 to 50, which is poor. Over the past 9 years, the number of water main breaks in our city, if you look at the third map, has gone from 56 to 80. This is just telling you how important it is that we need additional revenue options at the city level to improve streets and the utilities below them. Funding gaps remain due to a lack of local control that cities are experiencing. Due to levy limits and the elimination of LGA and market value credit, the city has had to eliminate our pay-as-you-go financing. In 2003 and 2004, Plymouth had to bond for street reconstruction and resurfacing. Bonding is costing our taxpayers more in the long run. The city's 2005 reconstruction levy will be $1.2 million or $600,000 depending on whether the market value credit aid is restored to cities. It is being proposed to be cut in the governor's proposal. So it's simply a math equation. If you look at the last bullet point, the current city funding gap is estimated as follows. We need to have $7.7 million a year to resurface our 11 miles per year. Right now, we are financing those by special assessments at about $2.3 million. We also have a street reconstruction levy, and with our market value credit as whole, would be $1.2 million, which leaves us a $4.1 million gap each year in funding. And I just want to speak to why we believe this is equitable for all people. Again, as was mentioned earlier, the stormwater utility was authorized for cities in 1983. Our city recently put that forward with a lot of citizen participation. The business community also supported that. But also with assessments, currently we assess 30%. We're looking at going to 40%. We feel under law that's about as high as we could go relating to the benefit to the property. But we are seeing that it is certainly the older homes, the older neighborhoods that are needing reconstruction. These are the people, too, that are usually needing affordable housing on fixed incomes, and these assessments are coming and hitting them very hard. We believe the street utility fee is an option that cities, if they so choose, with citizen input and business input, choose to go down is a much more equitable means to spread the cost across the city to maintain the infrastructure that we must maintain to provide quality of life in our community. And with that, I will just stand for questions and turn it over to my co-testifier.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Metzl. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. I'm Mike Metzl. I'm the city engineer for the city of Duluth, and I'm also the current president of the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. I want to thank you for this opportunity to provide you additional information on House File 313 and 495, which authorizes the city to impose a street utility fee. You've heard a lot of the testimony regarding this legislation, and so I just want to focus on a couple of key points and then deal a little bit in the technical aspect of the street system in Minnesota. First of all, I want to again reinforce that this is enabling legislation to be used by individual cities as they see fit, based on their local needs and their local purpose, and as a result, we certainly would not expect that all cities will choose to use this authority. I also want to again reinforce that this requires local public participation at a great level. It is fully the decision, if you will, of the local city to determine whether or not they want to implement a street utility, much as it was the case with the stormwater utility over the past few years. In brief, I'd like to briefly describe the local street system that we're dealing with in Minnesota. Minnesota currently has over 135,000 miles of roadway in the state. About 14% of that total, equal to about more than 19,000 miles, is owned and operated by Minnesota's 854 cities. As has been mentioned previously, cities with populations greater than 5,000, or about 134 of these 854 cities, receive municipal state aid funding, which can then be used to fund and maintain reconstruction of up to 20% of the local street system. The balance of the local street system, including the remaining 80% of local streets in the municipal state aid cities and 100% of the streets in the the 700 non-MSA cities, must be maintained and reconstructed with local city funding. Put another way, almost 16,000 miles of Minnesota city roadways are funded exclusively by cities. Today we're finding that maintenance and reconstruction of these local streets on a statewide basis must be deferred. It's being deferred because either general tax fund dollars are scarce or not dedicated, or other existing funding tools are limited, and you've heard about the special assessment issues and problems associated with them. But it's also important to understand what happens when maintenance is deferred. And I would akin it to the roof on your home. If you put a new roof or you build a new home, and again, the idea of new construction was brought up earlier, you put a new roof on your home, and if you do nothing to that roof for the life of that roof, it's going to eventually fall apart. But what you do is you maintain the roof. On a periodic basis, you go up and ensure that you seal in the cracks, if cracks are developed, if a tree limb falls on it and damages a portion of it, you fix it. The roof, the shingles, are like the top surface of a street. Underneath that street, underneath that roof, is the support structure of the street or the roof. And what we're trying to do here is we're trying to maintain the streets and reconstruct the streets just like you try to maintain and reconstruct the roof on your home. If you do it on a regular basis, if you keep on top of that maintenance, that roof is going to last you for a very, very long time. If you don't maintain that on a regular basis, at some point the shingles will fail, the underlaying will fail, and eventually the rafters will fail and the roof will fall down. That's an analogy that I think is important to understand relative to the street system. Without regular ongoing maintenance, average life expectancy of a local street is 25 to 30 years. With appropriate maintenance, this infrastructure investment can be extended to 50 or 60 years. Consequently, adequate funding for appropriate maintenance as well as future reconstruction is critical to the local transportation system. There's been a lot of testimony already regarding how the street utility concept would work, so I won't go any more into that other than to be able to answer any questions you might have with regard to that. I would like to point out a couple of issues again, or a couple of key points. Again, the first thing is that the overall fee levels would be based on the annual needs as identified by the individual city through a master planning process. Most cities in Minnesota work off of a 5-year capital improvement plan. We plan out our capital improvements, our infrastructure improvements over the course of 5 years, and the street utility fee would be based on that long-range master plan. Secondly, as has been noted, individual fees for specific types of properties would be based on trip generation rates as found in the ITE, Institute of Traffic Engineers, Trip Generation Manual. This is a manual that's used regularly by cities, the city engineers, city planners, and others. Whether you're dealing with existing development or new development in your communities, you are using that manual regularly to determine trip generation fees for specific businesses.
Mr. Metzl, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up. I have a number of other testifiers. We're beyond the time allotted for this portion of the bill, and the Transportation Policy Committee has more items to address in a short time frame, so we're going to have to move on. If you'd like to wrap up.
I will do that. Thank you very much, Chair. In summary, the Street Utility Authority is an equitable tool to finance local construction costs based on local needs. It will provide the necessary funding to allow cities to protect our street investments by doing maintenance and reconstruction on schedule, and it will generate this funding through fees based on transportation impacts created by each property. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present this information and be available to answer questions as necessary.
Great. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and I hope that you know where Chatfield is. It's southeast of Rochester on Highway 52. I'm Brenda Johnson. I'm the Vice Mayor of the City of Chatfield. We are one of those small towns under 2,500. In fact, we're just a little over 2,400. We do not receive any MSA funding. So we are one of those communities that is strictly reliant on our general fund for our street dollars. And for us in Chatfield, street funds, it's a big part of our general fund. In fact, I looked at our 2004 numbers, and it's roughly a third of our general fund spending is on street street expenditures. And the issue that comes out of it for Chatfield is that when money gets tight, street funding is one of the first things that becomes one of the items on the chopping block, because you hate to cut police, you hate to cut fire, you hate to cut ambulance. Even when you look at park and rec funding, our pool, having that in place reduces the number of drownings that we have occurring in our community, and so we hate to even lose the pool, because how do you justify cutting the pool expenditure when you know in the past, every year we had a couple kids drown? So it was not the type of thing where you want to cut that. What do we do? Well, we see in Chatfield that this type of option would, frankly, for us, it would increase the transparency of funding, and it would increase the stability of funding. Whenever we have an unexpected expenditure, granted, we try to keep reserves on place, but right now, I'll give you an example. We have an ambulance that, even though we have a real good program, it is experiencing problems ahead of schedule. And so it's going to be one of those things where we have to make a choice, street or ambulance. I can tell you that the ambulance is going to win. And we also view this as similar to enterprise funds such as we have for sewer and water. We've done better in metering our sewer and water, and there's no reason we shouldn't also try to look for improvements in how we meter the usage of our streets in the city of Chatfield. We feel that this is a more methodical type of user fee, such as we use for sewer and water. We also see that, yes, it would take some pressure off the property taxes, as stated before. As far as the benefits of businesses, we have businesses in Chatfield that are they're international exporters. We have Tui Furniture. They make high-end office furniture. A typical buyer for them is Fortune 500 companies, Saudi Arabian firms. And we also have Strongwell, which is a fiberglass pultrusion manufacturer. Mm-hmm. When you look on TV and you see the oil rigs and you see some fiberglass decking, a lot of that times that comes from Chatfield, Minnesota. Do they use county and state roads? Yes, they do. But how do their employees get to work? They get there on city streets. Thank you. And I'm also a new member on the Governor's Workforce Development Council. And frankly, what I'm learning already as a brand new member is that part of what creates the ability for businesses to recruit, retain, and develop their workforce is to have those quality features in a community. If we want to recruit workforce, we need to have our quality communities include things like quality streets. So I would like to suggest that this is something that will be, I think, real easy to support, and I appreciate that. I'll stand for questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to bring the two gentlemen from Edina up, Mayor Hovland and Mr. Houle, and Chair Earhart has a question for you. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
I'm Wayne Houle, a City Engineer, Public Works Director for the City of Edina.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, the question I thought you earlier was that cities, I think from our conversation, were already using this in a different form. Can you explain something to me like that?
Mr. Hull.
Yep. As Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, as you know, there's just many different ways to fund different things. Some other cities actually use what they call franchise fees, with Excel or CenterPoint. And what that is that they attach a certain amount on your meter charge. So it's on your electric bill, it says franchise, city franchise fee. That's one way of generating revenue, basically, to fund a street reconstruction program. That's kind of an end running the way to fund these things. I think that the best approach is to take an honest approach and just tell people this is the monies that are going to be used to fund your roadway reconstruction, and not kind of hide it in a franchise fees or drop it in your levy or some other funding mechanism.
All right, thank you. Representative Earhart, did you get your answer? And Mr. Mayor?
No, Madam Chair.
Representative Abrams.
These guys would go and fill the potholes in the Morningside area of China. There'd be no need for this hearing.
Generally want that through.
And on that editorial comment, are there any additional questions for the proponents of this bill? We do need to move on. All right. Thank you, gentlemen,
just
for coming.
Just a few brief comments, Madam Chair.
A very brief.
All right,
10
thank
minutes
you.
Over the time
right.
for the opponent, for proponents.
My name is Jim Hovland. I'm the mayor of Edina, the new mayor of Edina, here already asking for your help on something that's important for us. We're a first-ring suburb with a lot of aging infrastructure. Our roads are 50, 60 years old. They need to be reconstructed. In fact, over half our roads need to be reconstructed. We started running some preliminary engineering reports in some of the neighborhoods. We just did two neighborhoods. In one neighborhood, the special assessment level came out at $8,500 per lot. In the other neighborhood that we ran, it was $16,000 per lot. 25% of the people that live in our town are senior citizens, many of them on fixed incomes, many of them widows. It's the first time in 8 years that I've been on the city council that I've seen people coming forward saying we can't afford these special assessments. We need to figure out something else that we can offer them. When I talk to people in Edina, regardless of their age, whether they're seniors or young families starting out, they like the idea of spreading the risk. And this type of proposal, this transportation utility, allows us to spread the risk. We can generate the revenue that we need to help pay for these street reconstruction projects without having to put an onerous burden on these folks. Even when we give them 10 years to pay for these things, for some of these senior citizens, particularly some of the widows, it's just too burdensome for them. So this would really help us be able to develop something that would help spread the risk for some of these folks that just can't bear the total burden of these special assessments,
right.
And including your policy chair.
Thank you, Mayor Hovland.
Thank you.
We're now going to move on to the testimony in opposition to this bill. I have representatives from the Multi-Housing Association, the Minnesota Trucking Association, the Minnesota Grocers Association, the Minnesota Retailers Association, the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association, and the Minnesota Realtors Association. I'm hoping that you've kind of set up the order and who's going to cover what, and welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Jack Horner. I represent the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Just a couple of comments that I'd like to make and that others have other perspectives on it. The first comment is that, first of all, and with due respect to the proponents and to the legislators who support this, we do most emphatically state that this is not a fee. It's a tax. They call it a fee, but it's not a fee. It's clearly a tax. A tax is a payment by definition, a payment based on a basis, such as wealth or income or sales, and the revenues used for the common good. That's what this is. A fee, on the other hand, is a direct payment for a specific service by the immediate user of that service. You want to get into a park, you give them a couple bucks, then you get in. Tit for tat. This is a tax. It's 100% has all the characteristics of a tax, 0% of the characteristics of a fee. It's based on a novel, complex, new basis called trip generation. We're used to dealing with bases of assets or wealth, of income, of sales, but this is a whole tax based on a brand new basis called trip generation. It's a very complex, difficult to administer basis, which I'll talk about in a moment. Clearly, it's not a fee. For example, a tenant in an apartment who doesn't even own a car would pay it through his rent, of course, would pay the trip generation tax. Doesn't even own a car. Clearly not a fee. A shopping center or an employer who maybe draws 90% of their customers or their traffic from outside the city they are located in. They're not paying for those streets in the adjoining cities. And there's no connection between paying for the streets in the city that building is located in and the streets that they actually are paying for if they're drawing 60, 70, 80, 90% from outside of the city that they're located in. And like all taxes, it's paid by people, not ultimately by businesses. And so the ultimate payer is someone who drives. So if I drive, for example, I'm going to work, I maybe stop at a store on the way home or a nursing home or something, maybe I drive 1 mile, maybe I drive 3 miles, maybe 20 or 50 miles. No connection. But every stop I make, I pay a tax because I drove there. So I pay a tax based on just the fact that I chose to visit a particular location rather than how many miles of street usage that I took to get there. Secondly, we see this as a sort of maybe unintended, but sort of an end run around property tax reform. Property tax reform was enacted in 2001 after a great deal of work and effort. It makes apartments and commercial pay more. This trip generation fee does, and yet apartments and commercial already pay more. Property tax reform was tremendously beneficial to apartments. We're very pleased, very grateful for it. But they still pay more than single-family homes do on the first $500,000 of a value. So they're already paying more. This is an additional tax. It doesn't replace the tax. It's an additional tax. And it's a way, in our opinion, of kind of getting away from the principles of tax reform, accountability. Homeowners are supposed to pay a fair share. That's one of the fundamental premises. They should know what they're paying so that they can make a realistic decision. Certainly, this gets away from simplicity. It takes away from a property tax base that should be used for the basic needs of a city. One of the concepts of property tax reform is leave the property tax base more available to the cities. The state picks up more of the school funding. In the last couple of years, I understand there's been not as much progress as one would have liked, but that's a temporary situation. The state clearly is picking up more of school taxes, county programs or programs that used to be on the counties. The basic idea is the tax base is more and more available to the cities to use for basic needs. Streets obviously are basic needs. And finally, this is a very complex tax to administer. First of all, it does not replace other taxes. It adds to the taxes. It's a brand new tax. It's the foot in the door. We look at the history of taxation. What are the chances that this won't grow and become permanent and ever larger in addition to all other taxes? The language is such that you can use it essentially for everything but new streets. The surveying is not in the definition of reconstruction, so maybe not technically new streets, but grading, substrata, subbase, adding lanes. I mean, all of these come under the definition of things you can do with this money. It's essentially new streets, maintenance, and upgrading. And the estimates that you've seen of how much this would cost are by definition meaningless because the law provides, the bill provides, that every city adopts its own plan and its own ordinance. I brought with me the Trip Generation Manual. This is volume one of what will be our new tax shelf, of our new taxation volumes. It's highly complex. Its own introductory material says that these are estimates. They are not to be used for purposes other than what they're intended for, which is by engineers to help to judge what our street needs are going to be. They are national estimates. They are loaded with caveats about how you adjust it and various ways of adjust it. Do you want trip ends only or round trips? Time of day. There are 70-some charts in here, different types of trip generation that could be applied to different kinds of apartments. That's just the apartments. Based on when do you do the measurement, night or day, weekends. What about a church that's open on Sunday? Are they going to want you to do the measurement on Sunday morning or on a Wednesday afternoon? It's loaded with decisions, complex policy decisions that have to be made, and the book itself says that this is not really intended for anything other than what they're talking about. It creates a whole new bureaucracy. There's an appeal procedure in the bill. Well, how do you appeal? You've got to call your trip generator appraiser expert. He would then come out and, I don't know, file your appeal for you, I guess, determining how many trips you generated. They got you down for 10. You really only did 8 per day on average. God, that's a 25% increase in my taxes. I'm going to appeal that. It's a very complex tax to try to administer. It's putting a square peg in a round hole. Streets are important. You've heard all that. Clearly too important to be messing around with a complex, novel, untried kind of an idea like this. The cities have the property tax and many other sources of income, and I think they should use them. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Backus.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus. I'm Director of Public Affairs with the Minnesota Trucking Association. We are a statewide trade association representing all segments of the trucking industry and all sizes of carriers. And while being only 4% of the vehicles registered in the state and 6% of the vehicle miles traveled, truckers contribute one-third, or $379 million, in state taxes and fees to support our transportation infrastructure. First, I'd like to say a trucking company by its nature is going to be generating trips in and out of its terminal. What kind of fee can we expect? As Mr. Johnson said, the Institute of Traffic Engineers Trip Generation Manual lists 28 sets of rates based on 4 different variables for truck terminals alone, with the caveat that users are cautioned to use these data with care because of the small sample size. So despite referencing this manual in the legislation, cities will have a great deal of discretion in setting this rate. We then have concerns that this could put trucking companies in a city that chooses to levy this fee at a competitive disadvantage versus the carrier down a road in the city that doesn't choose to use this authority. Similarly, our trucking members serve customers that have trucks in and out of their facilities all day long, such as fuel terminals and ag processing plants. If those businesses are assessed a seat fee, it has been suggested that they will try to recoup their costs by charging trucks a fee as they enter the property. Our members don't have the kind of liquidity to arm drivers with cash to pay these fees when making a delivery. But most importantly, many trucking companies and the businesses they serve are located on state highways and county roads within a municipality. How is it fair that they pay the city a fee for a service the city isn't providing them? Especially when, as I mentioned, the trucking industry is already paying for these roads through fuel taxes and registration fees collected through the Highway User Fund. In closing, we have concerns about expanding a city's taxing authority in this way. We don't believe this mechanism fairly gauges use or can be considered a fee when it would be assessed against a property, regardless of whether it is situated on a locally funded city street. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Ms. Burnett next with your group?
So we do have a handout for the members as well.
All right. Mr. Ness, we'll be able to help you with that. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, Buzz Anderson. I represent the Minnesota Retailers Association, and I want to thank you and Chair Earhart for the opportunity to speak in opposition to House File 313. I represent, again, the Minnesota Retailers Association. I do appreciate this opportunity to speak in opposition. Now, why would we be opposed to this? It's pretty simple. Anytime that public policymakers provide one more opportunity for businesses or retailers to be taxed, it's absolutely the wrong signal to send or to adopt if, in fact, you want to encourage it. The history of every community in this state is that they've had individuals who have an entrepreneurial spirit, and they're willing to invest in bricks and mortar, employees, inventory, and all that to provide needed goods and services to the people that live in the community. Now, their contribution goes way beyond what happens in a local community as well. Take note of the fact that retailers are the largest tax collectors in the state, remitting the sales tax without any compensation, unlike what happens in other states, where they, in fact, are compensated. In fact, some large retailers are even required to pay their sales tax early, a temporary measure that was put in 1992, the June Accelerated Sales Tax, and that was done so that the state could avoid a cash flow crunch at the end of its fiscal year. Now retailers assume that burden to take on that cash flow crunch, and if they estimate the taxes that they haven't collected yet wrong, they in fact will pay a fine. Retailers also pay very hefty property taxes. In addition, they represent the largest employer class in the state, providing full-time and part-time employment to citizens all across the state, in many cases offering benefits as well. Yes, retailers also provide communities in many ways some very obvious benefits that don't seem tangible, but rather are intangible. Ask Representative Nelson or Representative Gunther or Representative System or Simpson what kind of contributions their businesses make in every community. In addition to providing the employment training, the goods and services needed by the citizenry, a large property tax base, ask how much they donate to every football team, every basketball team, the band boosters, the volunteer firefighters, the ambulances, and they see. Representative Nelson is shaking his head over there, so he's been hit up and continues to be hit up constantly. And you know what? They don't complain about this. They do it as a member of that community. Now, I would just close by saying this. By adding the transportation utility fee or tax, what you do is you just add one more obstacle to discouraging the development and the improvement and the contribution that retail makes in every community. Therefore, I would urge you to vote against House File 313.
Thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Finette.
Good afternoon, Chair Holberg, Chair Gerhart. I'm Lisa Frenette, and I am the manager of the Government Affairs for the Minnesota Grocers Association. I'd like to follow up real quickly with two quick points on why this fee would disproportionately hurt Minnesota's grocery industry and the stores and also the customers that they serve. First, grocers serve a basic need in their communities. Quite simply, people need to eat, and so going to the grocery store is a necessity. In applying this additional fee, grocers, who already have very thin margins and generally net about a penny on every dollar, will be forced to pass this expense on to the consumer. Adding a new fee, in reality, a new tax on top of taxes that already exist, would be borne disproportionately by the families who buy the food. Second, this fee is based on a trip generation rate, and grocery stores generate more weekly and monthly trips than most other retail groups. Most customers generally make 2 to 3 trips to the grocery store each week. Therefore, the food buying public will pay a steeper price than consumers of other goods. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee about the grocer's opposition to House File 313. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And I think last but not least are the Auto Dealers Association and the Realtors. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Shalander. I represent the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. We represent all the franchise new car dealers in the state of Minnesota. I will be very brief with my comment. We are opposed to the street utility fee bill for two reasons. Firstly, this is a new property tax. And secondly, streets are not utilities. As Mr. Horner went over in very eloquent detail, you know, property owners already pay for street maintenance as part of their property taxes. And if locally elected officials who believe that their municipality needs more revenue to pay for street maintenance or upgrade or some refurbishment or whatever form that takes, then they should raise property taxes, because that's how government remains accountable to taxpayers, not by attaching fees to businesses that have little say over how these fees are going to be administered. You know, I mean, I don't have to tell you, the businesses are not necessarily the constituents of the communities where they're located. You know, I have a hard time believing that these fees are going to be assessed against homeowners in the same manner that they're going to be assessed against businesses. There's nothing in this bill that says that this street utility fee is going to be assessed against all types of property. Imagine it'll be up to the local government to determine, you know, that homeowners don't have to pay it, and churches don't have to pay it, and schools don't have to pay it. Well, who's left? It's going to be businesses. And the other thing, you know, I don't have much confidence that this isn't going to be a way for local governments to penalize the types of land uses that they don't really care to have in their city. So my second point is that streets are not utilities, that real utilities imply that the user had some sort of control over how much they consume of the utility, like water or electricity. The property owner doesn't have any control over how much other people are using the street in front of their property. You know, and if local governments want to treat streets as utilities, then I guess I would suggest that maybe street utility fee ought to be subject to rate regulation by the Public Utilities Commission, like real utilities have to do. So, in sum, we oppose this proposal. It's an unnecessary taxing mechanism, and it provides very little accountability to the taxpayers who will be burdened by it. Thank you for the ability to comment.
Yeah, comment. At this juncture, you mentioned fees, and you should know, if you don't, and where were you at the time, that 2 years ago, this body raised fees, the surcharges, and so forth, but not taxes, by $1 billion on the people of the state of Minnesota. And where were you then complaining about that?
Right here.
I didn't hear you. I didn't hear you. Okay.
Mr. Dorfman, welcome.
Madam Mayor and representatives, you heard me. I mean, if you didn't hear me, there's something wrong with me. Okay, so, Madam Chair and Representative, and I want to thank Representative Lincheski and Representative Hornstein. They've been very kind. We visited a lot. They presented their case. We're against this because We did 2001 property tax reform as a result of that man and Governor Ventura, meaning Representative Abrams. And we figured, even though businesses are still paying 2.5 to 3 times more than houses for the services they get, 2.5 to 3 times if you factor in the statewide business tax, not just 2 times more, that everybody in the state, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, say they care about job creation. And in the last committee, I talked a little bit about Highway 52 and the next 10 years, which is going to be, it's going to create, in my view and our view, a Silicon Valley or Highway 128 in Minnesota. What we do not want to do is chase the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota and the University Hospital or other related businesses that are going to spin off. We do not want to send a message that in Minnesota what we really want to do is do politics, which is what fees are. Fees are politics. Because taxes are in people's face. They're transparent. I know what they are. I can go to a truth and taxation hearing to argue about them, which we've supported all these years. We were one of the original supporters of truth and taxation. When taxes on homes get too high, homeowners show up. They're not too high. It makes for good politics to talk about it. But Minnesota is the 49th lowest poverty state in the country. It's got the 7th highest per capita income. Fees are not deductible, but taxes are. So when people pay these fees, they will not get to deduct them, versus if they were on the property tax, they could. 40% of Minnesotans itemize, which means 40% of Minnesotans could deduct the tax, which means they wouldn't be paying whatever it is. They would pay whatever it is less their deductible or whatever their marginal tax bracket is. So the craziness of this is the city's probably, we need more money for roads, that's right. No question. So we should, if we could, but the governor doesn't want to, and that's okay because he's the governor and he got elected, we should raise the gas tax. And we should raise it a nickel. We should raise it a dime for the next few years until we get billions of dollars, because that's what we need. But we can't do that right now, so everybody wants to do this, or some people do. This is a stupid thing to do. Again, for the reasons I stated, number one and number two is, the bill definitely makes it clear that the people who are going to pay this, the bill meaning on lines 23 to 25, where is it? On lines 23 to 25, it says, authorization, municipality may impose the street utility fee provided in this section against land. It doesn't say against all property owners. It says against land. Now, let's guess who they're going to do it. The city council is going to vote to impose it against homeowners as opposed to hiding it by charging it to businesses who then are forced to pass it along in higher fees and or higher services. And by the way, just so we're clear, higher business costs, they're forced to pass them along. I've been saying this for 20-some years, and maybe someday somebody will understand, and I don't mean to be condescending, but businesses have three things they can do with the tax. They can pass it forward in the form of higher prices, if the market lets them. They can pass it backward in the form of lower wages or less benefits, or, which is sort of the way that a lot of people in Minnesota think, the shareholders can eat it if they're publicly traded. Well, most of us have pensions, 401ks in my case, and state employees' case, they invest in, they have better pensions than I do, and city employees have better pensions than I do, and my employees. So what they're able to do is, what they don't understand is when you tax a business, shareholder equity goes down. So we're defeating part of the what we're actually ending trying to do. So my point is, there is a way to raise money. Let them raise the property tax. Let them face the voter at the truth and taxation hearing like everybody else. Let the tax be transparent. This is not transparent. This is opaque. And I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your voting against this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dorfman. Representative Lanchesky and Representative Hornstein, if you'd like to come back to the table and maybe make comments on some of the information that's been presented, particularly in opposition to your bill, I'll give you the last word and answer any questions of the committee before we make a recommendation on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was fun. I do want to say something about just today's hearing, and I know there's a lot of freshmen on this committee. I haven't experienced such a hostile hearing yet this year, and I'm disappointed, quite frankly. And I hope you all as legislators will take more time to think about this than what's taking place in this room. I have to tell you, my personal history here is I am one of the strongest business advocates in this legislature. I supported strongly 2001 property tax reform, and I would do nothing to renege on that. Now, you know, what you all need to know is everybody who just testified about this bill, except one, didn't take the time to talk to us. So, you know, think about how angry people sound and what inflammatory language we've just heard. And just try to set that aside and think about the policy. It started with, this is a tax, it's not a fee. Fine, call it a tax. I mean, I'm one of the people who was using the word tax into the microphone, by the way. And the public does not discriminate between the two. They're going to pay it. And under a property tax method or a trip method, the business is going to pay it. This isn't about one way they pay and one way they don't. They pay either way. As far as transparency, it is transparent. I'm sure all of you get a water bill. And I'll tell you, my water bill is much more transparent than my property tax bill. My property tax bill says your taxes this year, after limited market value credit, and market value credit, which we don't have anymore, and if you live in a city that has LGA, you get all these minuses, I guess, so the politicians here can feel really good that they're giving people a break before they actually see their tax. Mine says it's like $4,800. It doesn't tell me where that's going at all. It just says I should pay $4,800. Your water bill says you will pay $3 for stormwater. You will pay $2.50 for recycling. It is very clear. It is as transparent as it gets. I would completely disagree and ask people to go home and look at their utility bills. This is not a utility. That was another thing. True. Maybe we're using the wrong word. What is on a utility bill? Recycling. That's not a utility. Stormwater. That's not a utility. Garbage collection. That's not a utility. Sewer. That's not a utility. I mean, I'm not using the word like it's the electrical pole. I mean, when you look at how city governance works, utility doesn't mean something generating power. So I just wish people would have done a little homework on this and not have escalated this to a point that it's hard to have a really legitimate conversation. There was a lot of laughing going on about this big book about trip generation. You know, I'm one of the people who actually thinks that there's a place for academia in the world and that sometimes fairness is complicated. Now, we can have the most simple system in the world and it's not going to be fair. Or we can try to be fair and we'll have to give up on simplicity. Ask Chairman Abrams, who probably has a lot of issues with this bill, if you can do fairness and simplicity at the same time. You can't. You can't. So let's be clear on that. As far as saying, Glenn Dorfman said this, and he is the person who talked to me, so I will totally give him credit for that. But he said that, you know, can't you just see the city councils who would say that the residents don't have to pay? As a former city council member, and I know some of you are, I have to say, that is just so not going to happen. And if you'd like language to say that there are none of these other utilities that homeowners don't pay. I mean, you're not going to have people say, you know what, you can pay the garbage collection in Mall of America for all these homes. And you could pay the stormwater for all the homes, Cub, Grocery, and Target. I mean, it's intended to have residents pay. Come on. I mean, we're not in any, you know, if there was a city that could do that, I guess we could put language in there to make sure they can't. I would be the first one screaming about it. So, you know, I just have to say that, you know, the trip generation stuff, it is new, and I know people, you know, one part of the testimony was we shouldn't be for anything novel or new. You know, since I've been here, we've done a lot of new and novel things, and we have a lot of pride and ownership around here about that, and I don't think people should be afraid of that. But if you're going to ask, you know, is this in the end, and I think this is the core objection, a new tax, you know, on top of another tax, that's probably true. It is. And I will tell you, I had breakfast with the governor this morning. We had a really great conversation. He understands that while we can't have new statewide taxes, we all get that, we need to find new revenues. And I'm taking that seriously. In the end, we have to compromise, folks. We have to cut a bunch of stuff, find some new revenues, and do the best we can to get out of this. And this is the reason I got behind this piece of legislation. If people aren't going to come to the table in the Minnesota legislature and both parties and come up with new ways to release the pressure that is taking place in cities and counties, and at the same time trying to try to squish them here, we're not trying to solve the problem. I mean, you know, we all have to be willing to put something on the table. We're trying to put something on the table. Obviously, people are angry about it and fearful of it, I guess. But this is happening in stormwater utility, and when it happens, it almost always has the support of the business community. And for the business community who thinks that the property tax system won't smack them harder, they're wrong. I have supported business tax compression from day one. I'm one of the people who has fought to see business get their property taxes reduced. And I would not support a bill that's going to make it go back up. So I just have to say I'm just really disappointed with the testimony. And maybe it's just transportation, but I haven't been in a committee hearing like this yet this year, so maybe it's, I don't know.
General Lynch, just going to see if there's any questions by the committee, and we'll see. Representative Abrams.
Well, Madam Chair, and to the city people, and to Mayor Johnson, who I hold in high esteem. Mayor Johnson, your levy is approximately $20
million.
$22 million. And the funding gap here is $4 million. So make no mistake, it's a 20% increase in revenues in the city of Plymouth. So what does the city, League of Cities do? They put out this street utility concept for Hibbing, which I know has a budget of $10 million, and shows a 3%, what the effect would be on 3%, $350,000. So I know the budget there is about $10 million, Jim Miller, give or take a million. So I'm disappointed that people aren't getting the full idea of exactly how much money that you're looking for. That's first. Second, Representative Blanchesky, if you learned nothing in the tax committee, it is about administration. Take a look at the bill as to, there is no training for the assessors. It's just that there's this book. There's no guidance to the tax court as to how they're about to go about their job and obligation. Take a look at the property tax and all of the hoops that have to be gone through in order to be able to assess a tax. I thank you for your honesty that this is a tax, but there is absolutely nothing in this bill in order to deal with the administrative problem. Then you bring the tax court involved.
We took them out in the author's amendment.
Oh, you took them out
in the... We're in district court now, Representative Abrams.
Has anybody talked to the Judiciary Committee as to the additional caseload that this would bring? You know, at least initially, there will be thousands of cases brought. The way it works, in case people in the room don't understand, is that the Minnesota League of Cities basically operates a legal defense fund. To be fair, the business community does the same thing. So there will be lawsuits throughout the states and district courts throughout the states that will be funded on one side by the business community, on another side by the Minnesota League of Cities, paid for by property taxes, by the way, in which these are going to be litigated from beginning to end. It may be an interesting concept to talk about and to think about, but I don't think that all of the ramifications of this, just from a tax administration point of view, has gone through. And I really do think that if you're going to come in and ask for roughly $4 million on a $22 million base, maybe we ought to put that Hummer on the chart here and see what happens.
And Representative Abrams, I'm sorry that you missed the amendment that's going to district court. Originally, the motion on this bill was for it to pass and refer to the Committee on Local Government. We're running out of time. It's obvious that this...
I feel
bad. It's obvious that there's a lot of high feelings about this particular bill and a lot of issues, and I think with... unless I have really big objections by Representative Hornstein and Representative Lanchesky, I think I'm going to lay this on the table. We'll see if we can work. I've heard some really strong feelings by Transportation Finance Committee members, and this might need a little more work before it hits prime time and we send it to Chair Olson's committee. That being said,
Madam Chair, if I may, just to address
just a minute. We have a few more minutes here. If there are questions by committee members, we'll allow Mayor Johnson to respond to Representative Abrams' comments briefly, and then I would like committee members, if you have particular issues or comments for the bill authors that you'd like to see addressed in the intervening time, to address those, and then we're going to have to adjourn the Transportation Finance Committee and allow Chair Earhart to get to his agenda items as well. Mayor Johnson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and Representative Abrams, who I also hold in the highest esteem. And I don't want to get into a debate on taxes because I would be outwitted there for sure. But just to clear up, the $4.1 million gap that we have shown, we are looking at different ways to lower that gap. One would be supplementing a street utility fee. The other would be to increase our assessments if we had to. And we may not be able to totally close the gap, so we're not proposing 20% increase. One of the problems, though, I would say that cities have right now is that we've had levy limits. We've had levy limits that were so strict that they did not allow for growth or inflation. In my city, that's crippling. I believe over the last 20 years, we've had levy limits at 16 out of those years. We know that there are spending freezes out there, property tax freezes, the taxpayer bill of rights. We know that there are efforts out there that will totally work against local control. Nobody likes to impose a new utility fee. None of us as a city council likes to have to go and say, guess what, there's a new fee coming to our citizens and our businesses. We pay those taxes too. We're accountable to them. But this is because there are no new revenues and there are limits to local governments, and those roads don't know that they can only deteriorate at inflation and growth. Those roads don't know that they're not allowed to fall apart the way they are.
Thank you.
And I would say,
we have to
thank
run
you,
out. Committee members, are there any comments, questions, issues that you would like to share at this time? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask one of the authors. It's my opinion that this has been used in other states for quite a number of years. I was wondering what you know about other states and where it's been used. It's been used exclusively that I'm aware of in some other states. Is this bill based on the same principle?
I think it looks like the bill authors are going to phone a friend here, and we have Mr. Metzo to address your question, Representative Leader. Issue in other states.
Leader, yes, there are a number of states across the country that have implemented street utility fees. Oregon is one key leader in this area. They've been doing it for years and years and years. And it is a very comprehensive process that they go through that establishes the local utility fee. But this is not new. Just like the Trip Generation Manual, it's not a new book. In fact, if you look at the age of the book that they were laying up here, I think you'd find out it was a pretty old book. Any decision made with transportation in this state, whether it's whether how big a development is going to, how big the streets and development have to be, what kind of a commercial roadway needs to serve new businesses, is based on information in that Trip Generation Manual. So to say that that is a new, out-of-the-world way to generate information on transportation funding is erroneous. It's a book that's been used for years and years and years by everyone in the metropolitan area and across the state who has to make transportation decisions and size transportation routes.
Thank you. Chair Earhart. I'm going to Chair Earhart, and then you will be next. So
I want to thank Representative Houston and Cecily for bringing this forward, because we are now down to the level of starting with the state, going on to the counties, the townships, and the cities, and the bill adds up. We're now at about $1.4 billion a year in transportation needs. And we got an enormous problem. We just have to get into it and find some other way of doing this if this isn't going to be the way.
Thank you. Chair, I heard your comments. Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And to the authors, I'd also say thank you for bringing something new to the committee. But I do think that there are a number of issues that still need to be worked through. And I've spoken with Representative Winchesky at length about this legislation, and she knows that I have concerns about it. One of the things, and perhaps I go a different direction as it relates to the business community. You know, in my district, I have a number of major employers. I have Best Buy, the Mall of America, and a number of other large employers. And as we look at fairness and trip generation, one of the things that was mentioned earlier was a cap. That's something that I'd oppose. I don't think that if, in fact, we're trying to find fairness and then we start creating artificial ceilings, that's providing fairness. And so as we try to look at this as we're moving forward, I hope that that we'll keep that in mind. And I'm still having some difficulty trying to understand if this is truly a way of raising funds in a different way or if it's increasing funds for communities. Obviously, there's a sense that that this will raise additional funds, and I feel uncomfortable just with the way it's drafted now and the concept being able to support it today. But again, I do appreciate the fact that there's folks trying to find new strategies to bring money into the transportation system, and hopefully we can all work on that together.
Thank you, Representative Larson. Any other comments before we move on to the other business? All right, Representative Hornstein and Wincheski, you've heard a lot of information presented today. I think you have your work cut out for you. We wish you the best of luck, and we'll look to see that some of these issues being addressed. And unless there's other business to come before the Transportation Finance Committee, we are adjourned. The Transportation Policy Committee will continue. Thank you, Madam Chair.